This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Is Sky Blues Extra.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sky Blues Extra podcast. Of course, as always, in association with the Sky Blue Tavern and Dylan's Brewery, the only places to go and enjoy both pre- and post-match entertainment in Coventry. We're here to talk through everything Sky Blues and what's been going on in the most recent weeks, and I'm joined to do that by Matt. How are you, Matt?
Yeah, very well, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good.
Good start to the week.
Yeah, exactly. It's very difficult to be anything but positive, I think, at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, sum up your sort of feelings around the Sky Blues at this moment in time.
Yeah, I think, you know, what Mark Rummins was telling us all those weeks, and we were all kind of, no, nobody was, well, most of us weren't doubting Mark Robbins, but I think we all started to get a little bit frustrated with that same line, weren't we? The it will come together and it needs time, and obviously, as much as we all love Robbins and nobody's talking about getting him out of the club or anything as extreme as that, it got a little bit frustrating. I think we can all admit that it got to a point where you're saying, you know, that's all well and good in terms of it all coming together at some point, but you know, can it start coming together a little bit sooner than it felt like it was going to happen? But he was right. You know, obviously we can't really argue with the form that we've seen over the last 6 weeks or so. And It just everything looks so strong and in place for us to be set up as a very strong team, whether it's at this level or even at a higher level now, for a good few years. And the way we've done that over the last, you know, maybe year or two in particular is nothing short of remarkable.
Do you think we're all a little bit naive to how big the overhaul was, actually? Now you look back to that and, you know, I'm not sure anyone didn't cut Mark Robbins some slack, but maybe we were just a little bit, not just naive, but just not really contemplating exactly what a big overhaul it is. And, you know, when you think of that back four now, there's not one player who was there apart from Bidwell, who's obviously come back in. That was it. It's a completely changed back four for a start. It is a really big overhaul, and he kept asking for time, and you could see there was something there, but there was just games like the Prestons that just made you that concerned, I guess. But it was a really huge overhaul, wasn't it? And I think the proof's in the pudding now that we've kind of done that.
Yeah, in quite a few respects as well. I was thinking about this after the game on Saturday, and obviously it's a derby and it's a full crowd and there's a few specifics about that situation you're not going to get every week, but I was thinking back to another game where we won quite comfortably, a lot of similarities in terms of, you know, dominated the scoreline, and it was an early Saturday kickoff. It was the Middlesbrough game, second game of the season, winning 3-0, and as much as it was enjoyable to watch that win and you know, great to see and everything else, there was something about that game where I felt it was almost like that was an example to me of we are starting again in a lot of regards. You know, you just felt like we'd done so much work as a club to build up that relationship between the fans and the players, and it seemed in such a good position. And then you lose, you know, obviously a few of the real key parts of that relationship. Plus, You know, we'd obviously lost Callum O'Hare for a long period of time, who was another big part of that. And you kind of look at these players celebrating and you kind of think there isn't that connection still. You know, it's a nice, it's a great moment. We've won 3-0 and everything's great and happy. And but it wasn't that same connection. Yeah. And that kind of like, you know, even in itself, that tells you, you know, we had to start again on every front. So that's one side of it. Then it's obviously the playing side of it where we've lost, obviously, you know, the key spine of the team with Hamer and Gyökeres and Doyle and maybe a few others as well. And bringing all these new players in, you know, it was a complete overhaul, really. And yeah, when you actually stop to think about it, you kind of think, yeah, it's kind of what he was asking for was realistic, but we can all be a lot more patient when we're in the playoffs, right? You know, now we're at the other side of a good run and we're where we would hope to have been at the start of the season, then we can all maybe be a little bit more realistic in how we kind of review these situations versus when you're four games in a row, you know, back-to-back defeats and you're languishing towards the bottom of the table. So yeah, it's wins are always very helpful in terms of allowing you to be a little bit more realistic and obviously a lot more positive.
Absolutely. In this week's episode, listeners, we're going to, of course, cover, as Matt just said, the memorable win in the M69 Derby. We're also going to look ahead to the fixture at Hillsborough against league strugglers Sheffield Wednesday. And then we'll finish off by looking through the results of some recent Twitter polls that we've added and discuss the transfer window, which is going to slam shut in not too much long time, actually. Kicking off, Matt, with Leicester. The lineup, four changes: Collins, Thomas, Kitchen, and Godden in the mix. Any surprises with that? I mean, most of them pick themselves, I guess.
Yeah, I think obviously with Kitchen coming back from a suspension, there were maybe a few conversations around easing him in, but I think most people would have expected, because of how unbelievably solid that kind of, you know, back two pairing, centre half pairing had been alongside Collins. Obviously, I don't think there was any question marks around Collins. Kitchen, maybe the odd question mark, but just because of having to kind of maybe ease his way back in. But I think most people realistically would have expected to have seen that. You know, the other main one obviously is around Hadji Wright, and we seem to go back and forth with that after what happened with the Middlesbrough game. Obviously there were concerns and there were rumours about it being 6 weeks, and then Robin seemed to alleviate that with what he said. I think everybody thought, okay, right, well, we should be absolutely fine for the Leicester game. And then I think towards the end of that week we started to hear maybe actually there is something there and we were going to struggle for the weekend. So I think by the point of the team being released, there weren't really too many shocks, I guess, from that perspective. And again, it's kind of a testament to the strength of the squad and how much we have progressed, because you can't imagine, I guess, going into such a big game for us, losing kind of, you know, potentially some will argue, or I don't think many would argue, at least one of our best players and our best performers in recent weeks, from the starting lineup, and think, okay, well, we're taking on top of the league, and, you know, I think let's be honest, probably the best team in the league quite comfortably. Yeah. And we're going to be without one of our best performers, certainly from a form perspective. And as much as obviously that wasn't a great thing to see, it didn't, you know, fill me with the usual doom that it maybe usually would do. I don't know. How did you feel about that one in particular?
Yeah, I mean, it was just whether it was going to be Sims or Godden. And, you know, I think Robbins always knows what he's going to get with Godden. And he knew that. I think Robbins has kind of changed the way that we still hunt impacts, don't get me wrong, but I think he's kind of happy to leave these possession-based teams to have the ball as soon as they start to enter across the halfway line and into that sort of pushing into the final sort of third. That's when he wants people to go and hunt them down in packs and win the ball back. Mm-hmm. And I've got to say, it worked against Southampton largely. It worked against Leeds away from home, and you'd have to say again this weekend it works. So, you know, I think Godden gives you that pair of legs that you need to be able to hurry up defenses you know, at that time that they've crossed that. So, but I agree, there was, you know, no major changes that you would expect. Collins was always going to come in after the FA Cup break. And Thomas and Kitchen have been such a solid pair this season that it just makes complete sense to go back to that as soon as it was available, which was this kickoff, you know, this match here. Moving on to early exchanges of the game, Matt, you had Sakamoto. He, you know, very good feet, quick feet, and then he hit the bar, forced a save, and then had Justin, you know, again, completely on toast when he skinned him there. He's, you could tell in this game he was going to have a lot of the ball and he was going to be dangerous.
Yeah, I think the way we play in even in particular against these teams, like you say, you know, hunting packs, try and make things difficult, press. We're obviously risking potentially occasions where they're gonna beat that press and maybe open up a little bit more space. And I think one of the most impressive things about how we performed on Saturday was how organized we were in those situations. You know, Leicester are a team with quality, they've got technical ability, and there were a couple of occasions where we pressed and they managed to get away and get into a little bit of space, but everybody kind of seemed to know what to do in that situation. You know, if the ball's in this area, here's who's going to press, and if it kind of gets past them, then here's who needs to fall into what area. And it just seems so well drilled, but more often than not, it did seem to work off there, where we would press and we would nick the ball away from them and break. And you know, that fits perfectly into Sakamoto's advantages and positives as a player. You know, you can give the ball to him in a bit of space and allow him to kind of express what he can do with his feet, and he's always going to be dangerous, certainly at this level. So yeah,
what do you
it was
think
no
he
surprise.
Gives us that we didn't have last year? You know, what does he give us something that we just completely were missing?
I mean, it's funny because you watch him in a game and you watch what he does and you kind of think, it feels so, you know, if anybody watched a video on him, or, you know, a DVD or whatever it might be now, you'd kind of feel like you'd have a good understanding of what's to come. But it's just done so well that it always seems to pay off. So I think it's just, you can get the ball to him and feel relatively confident that he's going to turn it into something. It's that consistency of, you know, this is going to end up with an element of space, and whether that ends up with a cross or if it ends up, you know, playing it in towards, let's say, Milan, who might have gone in to support him, or a Callohair on the edge of the box, or whoever it might be. It's just that consistency of, okay, you have a player on the wing who's actually going to produce something for you. And at a certain stage of most games, if that's happening, you know, you're going to get some results off the back of that. You're going to get some chances and some opportunities. And aside from that, it's obviously he's creating and getting into good spaces for himself as well. So, you know, he's obviously, as a wide player, it's not just about him getting the ball to his feet. He seems to be, you know, very alert and aware when the ball's over the other end of the pitch, of, you know, when to make his run in and create space for him and time his run. And we've seen him score, you know, obviously scored the header against Middlesbrough, which you don't wouldn't associate a man of his size and stature with. But he seems to just, his ability to kind of, you know, I guess read the game, even
read
if it's
game,
not in his area. You know, you find that with a lot of wide players, if they haven't got the ball, then they're kind of not overly interested. And it's been a massive advantage for us to have somebody who plays in a wide position. But well, I think you could say from both sides, obviously Haji Wright as well, he's potentially somebody that you might expect is able to be a bit more of a presence if he drifts
in a bit more.
When
we played that box before, we always felt a little bit narrow. You know, when I think even back to like La Ligue 1 days, we played a really nice box form, you know, that box formation and played some lovely football and played through teams, but we didn't always ever feel, we always quite felt quite narrow. It used to be quite like, you know, pass and move and then through balls, and Godden was playing off the shoulder. Whereas now we're, you know, Bidwell and Sakamoto, we're whipping crosses in, and like you say, Milan when he's supporting, we are getting that width, which seems to be stretching teams, but it allows, you know, O'Hare clearly is getting into positions now in the center of the box, because that width is allowing him to get forward more.
Have a lot more space as well. And yeah, as we say, his ability to kind of you know, drift in and pose a threat if the ball's on the other side of the pitch. You know, we're talking, if we are playing Sims, and obviously Sims maybe hasn't produced the number of goals that we would have wanted to have seen, but you can still feel like you can play him, even if, you know, that maybe you're worried about his confidence in getting a goal himself, because, you know, whatever angle we're coming from, there's going to be support in that area of the pitch as well, and we're not going to have, you know, people who are wide players who are just going to be passengers if the ball isn't in their area of the pitch, if that makes sense. So you've got that threat coming through the middle, but also if the ball's wide on the left, then Sakamoto is a threat coming in to a more central position, and vice versa over the other side. So his consistency of obviously turning possession into, you know, good positions, creating space for himself, is in one regard a massive plus for us, but he's also a goal threat going into the middle himself. We're not seeing a lot of goals from him where you'd necessarily say he's you know, he's jinked in from way out wide, you know, 40 yards in, and he's had to do it all himself, and that's where the goals come from, right? We're seeing goals where he's actually getting involved in the middle of the pitch, or in the middle of the box, or in those kind of areas, and he's nipping in and getting a goal, I think, to both goals at Middlesbrough and a few other examples as well, Sunderland. So, he's just kind of an all-round threat, really, and more so in an attacking perspective when it comes to, you know, in a more central position.
I tweeted this week that after that game, that if you could bottle a feeling and sell it, it would be the time that, you know, the ball is passed out wide and you know, into Sakamoto's feet. You just get a feeling that anything can happen, like, once he gets the ball. And I'm not sure we've had that, probably apart from Jokeres, since, you know, for a long time. And I know that's not discarding anything that O'Hare does and Palmer when he gets the ball, but it's just different, isn't it? It's almost, he just seems to, I think, get people off their seat and on the edge of their seat, and you feel like anything can happen. And he seems to have a really good understanding, you know, with his colleagues, and, you know, long may that continue. We've got to talk about this penalty decision. Just talk us through that. Like, shocked? Have you seen them given? Is there any case for it being a, you know, a good decision?
It's a hard one. I'm completely the other end of the stadium, and I feel like everybody around, you know, obviously we're all COV fans, we're all kind of, you know, obviously biased in our opinion as well, but it just felt so clear and obvious from where we were as well, that it just wasn't a penalty. And then I even kind of say to myself at halftime, okay, well, let's have a look at it and see if I missed something, because I'm quite a long way away. And I'm like, no, Piers, I got quite a good look at it, quite a good view of what actually happened. So yeah, I'm quite open-minded when it comes to reffing decisions, as in I try and be a little bit more open-minded with, look, things are going to happen in games,
and speed, you kind of got a speed in real time, it's more difficult I think to make, you know, to make that. But with that one, it felt the ball went one way.
Yeah,
you cannot just stop yourself dead.
It's a difficult one. You know, like I say, you've got to maybe, you know, we don't want to go too far into it on VAR, because that's a whole thing in itself. But if we're seemingly, as a nation of football fans, not that on board with VAR, then there has to be some leniency with what our expectations are of officials, and not expecting them to see what we might see off the back of 70 down. Different cameras, slowed down to 1/1000th of the speed of what is actually happening at game time, and with perfect views and knowing where to look. But this is one where it's difficult to say, you know, you shouldn't be able to see that and make that decision. So yeah, it's a tough one. It was a tough one to take as well, because it just felt
sort of killed.
It just felt like
momentum.
A body blow. Yeah. It felt like such a body blow. I felt, you know, for me, we'd worked so hard in the first half, and I was thinking, you know, we're probably going to need to make a few changes in the second half, but we're fully in this game now against obviously a really good side. And then that happens and you're thinking, they've gone a goal up, they're just going to be able to slow the ball down and kind of kill the game off
force little chances out of sort of while we're trying to to get back into it. Yeah.
Yeah. And makers work even harder because they can be even more patient with the board. They don't have to force things, but we're going to have to force it. And that's where it's going to be really quite risky for us. So it wasn't even just the fact it's one goal and it puts us behind. It just kind of, you know, it made me kind of preemptively look at what we might have expected to have seen in the second half, but obviously that changed, you know, a few minutes afterwards as well. So you know, that was good to see. But yeah, at the time it was a pretty difficult one to take, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it did change very, very quickly. The the whole game was turned on its head again. Obviously Dewsbury Hall dispatched the penalty, but then shortly after, a red card, straight red. Again, for me, especially in the vein that the game had been played in the decisions that the referee had taken, I have to say it felt quite a harsh red, I think. But I don't know. Yeah. How did you feel?
Yeah, I certainly would say you could call it harsh. I think the timing of the incident probably didn't hurt us, you know, coming quite soon after the penalty. Yeah. I don't know, like the penalty, you know, he'd given it. It was quite a quick decision to give the penalty, which I don't necessarily have an issue in that in itself. But maybe there was a thought in his head of kind of, you know, was that 100% the right decision?
Wasn't it? I mean, he was straight in. He made his mind up instantly.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
do you think maybe there was some influence off the fact of, you know, he has just given a penalty and maybe he's even questioning that in his own mind? Look, referees are human, right? You know, they make snap decisions, and maybe there was a thought in his mind, okay, right, really, was that the best decision? You don't know. It's hard to say. I think one thing I would say about it, you know, the guy does fly in.
Yeah, he's not does. Exactly. And you're almost waiting for that on a derby. It sounds bad, but you're almost waiting for that on a derby. Like, as a referee, you're going into that game and think, oh, I hope so. No one does anything stupid.
Yeah.
You know, and then he does. He does something stupid. He's well late. Bidwell has made enough of it, I think, to make it look pretty, you know, pretty harsh. And he's way out of control. And, you know, and it's obviously it's done us a massive favour. I just think if you could play that again, it probably wouldn't be a penalty, and it might be a very stern talking to and a final sort of warning. But
hey, I'm going to sound very, you know, biased Coventry here, which obviously I am, but I'm also trying to look at this from a biased perspective. I do think, you know, we could maybe feel a little bit more hard done by with the penalty than with the red card.
Yeah,
I would probably say, yeah, you look at it a few times back and you could make a very solid argument to say, okay, you could maybe go with a yellow on that decision for sure. But also, you know, when you fly in like that at that speed with very little control and you don't win the ball, then, and effectively, you know, both of your feet are involved in the tackle to some regard, then you are running the risk of what could happen versus you clearly win the ball and then, you know, your leg makes contact with somebody who kind of like moves into it. You know, they're different in that context. So I think, yeah, you could make the argument to say there's a little bit of balance there. But I also do think if you're looking at it realistically, you know, one decision probably a little bit clearer in my mind than the other. The second one, you do give the opportunity to be able to say, you know, you've flown in pretty uncontrolled and you're given the option for it to be a red card. I mean, you know, you look at it, there wasn't really too much, from what I could see, there didn't seem to be too much appeal from the Leicester
just
players.
Just going to say the same thing, actually. You know, when you think, you know, Leicester, you know, manager has been booked, wasn't he? I think so.
Yeah,
you know, there wasn't too much from their side. I think you're right, and you're spot on. You always run the risk of being sent off if you fly in like that, and that is what happened. We were able to make fortune of the extra man. Some good work, you know, down the left hand side, and it finally came into O'Hare, who sort of seemed to wait for the perfect opportunity to slide that ball in the net to equalize. But a really good finish. But again, just feel like he's getting in the box more Maybe that's because he's got players around him that are playing these intricate 1-2s in those areas. We do seem to be not trying to walk it in, but we do seem to be playing in opposition box, you know, much more. And I think back to the only thing we've got to compare really is League One Robins, because, you know, since we had Vic, and even the first sort of championship year, we went quite long and direct to Biamu and Walker, I think, at the time, and Jokeres when he played. And then we were even more direct, I think, with Jokeres in recent seasons. So it feels like the League One, but we still seem to be whipping balls in, and through balls seem to be Matty Godden playing off the shoulder a lot, whereas these seem to be much more Arsenal-esque, like playing the ball around, which sometimes is frustrating because we're trying to find, we sort of get up to 25-yard box and then we're trying to find that perfect pass. But because they're so good in those tight areas with the players that you've got, like Sakamoto, O'Hare, it kind of feels like it's working for us, and we're scoring, you know, a lot more goals now inside the box.
Yeah, I think that's the benefit of one of the bigger benefits of time, and obviously seeing things to come together, and maybe obviously now getting Callum O'Hare back and also up to full fitness, which I'm sure, you know, his first couple of weeks he still was getting back up to full fitness, so it's probably only still 4 or 5 weeks. Maybe a little bit longer where he's been at full fitness. So we're probably seeing the benefit of that. You know, I think we saw a period of time where, for me, we were better without the ball, consistently better without the ball. I didn't think we were as cohesive at that point, as you can probably say would be understandable as a new squad coming together with regards to trying to piece these things together so intricately and then work it, you know, almost to within, you know, 6-7 yards of the goal and tap it in. So we were playing some, you'd see us kind of get 70% of the way there, but something would always go wrong with it. So you could see he was trying to play that style, and then you started to move away from it a little bit and just kind of allow the opposition to have a little bit more possession and then just try and nick the ball away and just be a little bit more effective from that perspective, you know, trying create opportunities at speed when there's a bit more space. Whereas now you can see the benefit. People are starting to look a lot more. You just have that much more coordinated feel about the way that we're moving forward. Players seem to recognise and gel really well. O'Hare's come back, and obviously now he's at full fitness. He looks like an even better player quite comfortably than he was before he obviously got injured, and everybody seems to be, you know, I think buying into what Robins wants to do on a football field and has the ability to do what he's after. You know, they've been bought in specifically for a reason. So now that we're seeing the benefits of, you know, them playing together for a period of time, we're obviously seeing the ability to actually see the benefit of trying to, you know, get those opportunities a little bit deeper on the pitch. I was quite frustrated actually in this game because I felt they're down to 10 men, they're a goal up, they're going to try and sit in and make it difficult for us, and we're not really utilizing the ability of having that extra man. And I just thought, I want to try and, you know, tire them out, get a bit more, try and, you know, make them move. And even they were quite happily allowing us in that second half to have the ball up into the penalty area, outside the penalty area. But they were going to make it incredibly difficult for us to do anything once it came to being in the box. And we had that period of time, you know, before maybe even we made the substitutes, where we were kind of moving it around the penalty area and then, you know, quite patiently passing it around the area. And then at a certain point, somebody would get it and try and float something in because maybe we were frustrated and we're trying to move things along and it just wasn't the right moment. And you just felt like this is not developing into a good pattern. And I think the substitutes, looking at this game specifically, the substitutes were massively important to us when he made them. And, you know, we've obviously, you know, quite often Cov fans will talk about Robins maybe not leaning on substitutes as early as he could do. And you could see in this game that definitely wasn't the case. I think we saw the first subs even before maybe the 60th minute. And all of them that came on were still given that good 20 plus minutes to influence the game. So that's kind of against the norm with Robins. And
yeah,
I think obviously quite telling in the situation we were in on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it did feel like we were going like from wing to wing and passing it. But and some of that needs to be quicker. But I think we've still come on leaps and bounds in the way we move the ball across the, you know, across the pitch. And
different games are going to be different with that as well. You know, you're playing a team that are 1-0 up away from home, whether it's Leicester or anyone, you're away from home, you're 1-0 up and you're down to 10 men. You know, you're going to set up just to make it really difficult for you to do anything past the penalty area, basically, versus playing against teams where they're still trying to go and do something themselves at the other end of the pitch. So yeah, in certain situations, or in most situations, most weeks, we're not going to be playing a team who are down to 10 men, and the opportunities are going to be a little bit more available to us. I just didn't know if that approach was perfect for this situation. Obviously, the goal has still come from a situation where we've worked it into the box. So, you know, ultimately, it still paid off for us in this game as well.
Yeah, and sometimes when it is a backs against a, you know, sort of wall job for a team that, like you say, are down to 10 men, they do crowd that box, and that probably worked in our favour. Milan, he got the, you know, the second goal. He's taken it down really nicely. It's broke, you know, broke to him, and he's just, you know, thunderbolted it into the back of the net. And probably because it was such a busy penalty box, that's why the keeper couldn't get anything on it. Obviously a great goal, but he gives us a lot more than that. I mean, we know he's got a great free kick. I don't know where I was going to try and make up some lost and found posters for his long throw, because there was a time on Saturday when I just couldn't believe, and then he nearly did a foul throw when he was like
that Leah, I remember we told you, but that did look like it was a foul throw, to be fair.
But we were sort of 1-0 down, and I thought, oh, this is going to get absolutely launched into the box. And he sort of trotted over, and I thought, here we go, we haven't seen this for a while. And then he just went short, and it was, I don't know, it was bizarre. But you know, a very, very good player, seems to be taking it upon himself to continue that sort of, you know, changing room camaraderie, that connection with the fans. He clearly understands it and gets it. And I think maybe that's where results have turned, actually, that the whole team, you needed some of those new characters to appear and to come through. To sort of, you know, it feels like a team much more now that say, no, we're not going to get beat, we're going to stick in. Whereas before, they were looking around and they didn't know the characters of who were going to maybe step up and be tight enough to not concede or what have you. But do you have any concerns that Milan could have interest in the summer?
I do now. I don't think I'd stopped and thought about it, to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, I would be shocked if there wasn't, to be honest with you, when you see what he can bring to a team.
It's a four-year deal, is that right? 4 year? I thought a lot of
them. Yeah, well, I feels like everybody that we signed of, you know, of a, let's say, a younger age, so maybe not like a late 20s, like a De Silva or someone like that. You know, anybody who was lower than mid-20s, I'm pretty sure they're all four-year deals. So without seeing it to hand, I'm pretty sure he was as well. So, yeah, look, I would imagine we would get a good return on him if that was to be the case. But you would have to imagine there's going to be, if he keeps going the way that he is going, there would have to be some level of interest for him in the summer. It would be shocking if there wasn't, to be honest with you. I just think he offers a complete requirement for that part of the pitch, you know, well, what you're looking for from that area of the pitch. He obviously, I think earlier in the season, he showcased a bit more what he could do from a defensive position and point of view. But now he seems to have that confidence in terms of moving forward and taking players on. And maybe it is that relationship with Sakamoto, and he feels maybe a little bit more comfortable that he will cover him if he does really bomb forward. Plus, he's got the pace to be able to get back. And I think we said a couple of times on the podcast around that Kyle Walker element of, it's difficult really to feel like you're ever completely away from him, because he's so fast that opportunity to get back is always there. So you know, but his defensive positioning always looked strong, and now he's adding that ability to move forward and create chances and obviously create chances for himself and others. It's exactly what you're looking for in that area of the pitch. Plus, yeah, he's pretty handy from free kicks, as we've talked about, and he's, as you say, quite rightly, he's taken it upon himself to really enhance that relationship between the fans and the players, which I really can't stress how important I think that is, and how important I think it's been for us in the last few years, and how we've progressed as a football club. I think it's massive. And, you know, getting Callum O'Hare back was obviously a big part of that, because he was a player who always seemed to ease that relationship in. But we were going to need some new characters to come forward, and it couldn't just be Callum O'Hare, right? So he's really taken that upon himself, and I think it's absolutely massive. So, yeah, I don't know. Are you saying you've heard something about interest, or are you just thinking common sense would dictate you've got to imagine somebody's going to be interested in the summer?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was man of the match this week.
He tried to give it to O'Hare, but he did. It was him.
So, you know, he's made team of the week, you know, a few times. Any lazy sort of championship manager style managers out there will have him on their radar. And, you know, obviously there's still some big money floating around at the top and, you know, bottom of the Premiership and the top of the Championship, I guess, as well as, you know, we've seen these teams now from Europe that are sort of entering into Europa or, you know, on the sort of borderline of Champions League football are looking, you know, to the Championship to solidify their playing squad. So it doesn't seem without question, but, you know, I did check while you were talking, 4-year deal. I'm sure there's loads of Doug's special, deals in there that if he was to move on, it would be very, very advantageous for ourselves.
It's about trust in the process, isn't it? You know, we've kind of seen the examples now where we've obviously had a couple of players moved on that nobody would in them, I guess, preferences would have wanted to have left the club because they were such great performers for us. But now we're seeing the benefits, I guess, of that. Ultimately, when you start piecing the squad together, we've now got 10, 11, 12, 13 assets where you'd say these are players who, if we were to sell them on again, will themselves bring, you know, potentially quite comfortably over £10 million themselves, or a number of them would threaten that kind of number, and still with money to bring more in. You know, we've obviously signed somebody again in this window, and you think even if you weren't to sell anybody, there's a potential to bring more in, whether it's this window or in the summer as well. And you kind think trust the process, as much as I wouldn't want him to go at this moment right now. And it, you know, it might be him or it might be others, or it might be one or two others that happen in the summer. Possibly that will happen. What name that will be, we don't know. But you got to think all 4-year deals, really, they're probably going to be moved on for exceptional amounts of money. And we can start to feel relatively comfortable and confident now that what we get back in return is going to be pretty decent for us.
You make a good point about, you know, and everyone's made a similar point really about how we now, you know, we own these players rather than loans. It's quite inspiring that the only person that has gone bad really this transfer window seems to be I'm not a massive Jay De Silva fan. I'm not sure he is going to be. I know that I'm probably, you know, getting the boo boys here on me, but it's just for me, especially how well Bidwell's played and how solid he is. I think out of everyone, it feels to me that Jay De Silva is probably someone that is going to, has probably met pretty much his peak, I think. I'm not sure there's much more there. And maybe I think his lack of game time has actually really affected him. He doesn't seem to be anywhere near as good going forward as he was perhaps. But then he's playing in a time, you know, coming on often when we're solidifying a result rather than trying to push further on. But it's quite inspiring that, you know, the worst transfer business is someone that was a lonely and they've gone back, and, you know, that's been done. And actually all of the transfer business that we've done that was actual purchases has worked out to be pretty good, to be honest. It's it does look like, you know, as a recruitment team, we just keep getting it better and better and better and more nailed on.
Yeah, absolutely. Even, you know, I guess some people will still have question marks with Sims and obviously, yes, you always want your strikers to have more goals, but we've seen, you know, plenty of glimpses from what is still a very young player, in my opinion, of what he can become, and also his involvement in important moments for us, or what he can do when he gets involved. So, you know, obviously he was important in that first goal for us, which was massive, because it's only 10 minutes to go in the game. It's not a case of, you know, we don't get that, but it's going to come at some point in the game. You know, if we don't get a goal at that point, we're probably not going to win. So that was important. It was only, you know, what, 10 minutes or so after he'd come onto the pitch. You know, his assist for the goal against Oxford, I know it's League One opposition, but we've seen plenty of examples where we haven't really flourished as a club against lower league opposition. Yeah. And his assist for the second goal against Oxford is so impressive in so many regards that I don't know. He's probably the one, the reason I highlighted, obviously, he's probably the one outside of that where you'd go, well, there's probably still question marks. But it is more to do with the fact of, I don't think he's fully developed into what he can be. Plus, you know, he's maybe not the focal point as a striker as he might have wanted or expected to have been coming to Coventry City, right? He's at Everton. I've played at Chelsea and scored and done all these things. He's probably thinking, I go to Coventry and I'm the guy and, you know, I'm going to get 90 minutes regardless for X period of time. And he's kind of now got to understand that's quite clearly not going to be the case. So, you know, let's see what he's made of to an extent as well. But I'm still confident with him as well.
Well, that was, you know, a great result, brilliant win, one that I didn't really see coming at the start of the day. I did think it was going to be a very difficult. I wasn't worried that we'd get hammered. I thought we'd make a good match of it, but to run out 3-1, you know, winners, to be where we are in the position that we're in this stage of the season is just nothing short of, you know, incredible, really, for Mark Robbins. Taking man of the match, Matt, who was the star man for you?
Yeah, I mean, I would not to just kind of go straight in for the goal scorer with O'Hare, but the one thing that really stood out for me in this game as well was when we talk about the press, how involved he was in going and pressing their players and creating mistakes from their players and nipping in and getting the ball back. And we know he looks a little bit, you know, thicker in his physique than he maybe did before the injury, and he's using that to his advantage in terms of like his body positions, and he might nip in and, you know, be able to use his body a bit more in terms of like holding a player off or get in front and kind of win a foul in a free kick. And and I was just really impressed by what he did, surprisingly enough to say this, from a defensive point of view, to add on top of what obviously we saw with the two goals as well. He really worked hard and nipped in and won the ball back a lot of the time and just made himself a nuisance. And it was a really impressive all-round performance for me from the start of the game. So there were a lot of really good performances, and obviously Milan had a good shout for it as well, and a few others can have a good shout for or certainly needs a shout out for their performances. But I do think, rather than it just being quite obvious and saying that the guy scored two goals, it was an all-round performance for him. I don't know if you'd agree, but he just has to stand out, and I think he does deserve it.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
The Sky Blues will take on Sheffield Wednesday away from home, back in league action again at the weekend. Well, we're going to be there a couple of times in as many days as it feels like. You know, it's going to be a week turnaround till we go there in the FA Cup as well. Sheffield Wednesday, Matt, struggling so far this season, which is no great surprise. It's always very, very difficult when you're trying to establish yourself in that first year back, you know, in the Championship. But just two wins in their last five league games, one versus Hull, which you could probably argue they're very fortunate with. There was an early sending off in that game. I was also looking at the stats. Not one of their players has got over a seven on a who scored rating so far this season. Coventry have two in Ben Sheaf and Brad Collins. And I think, you know, in recent weeks or coming weeks, that could probably look to change as well with O'Hare probably getting more match time, able to push that sort of figure up. So it does look like we're not complete worlds, but, you know, at the moment in time, we're a big distance apart. How are you feeling going into this one?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you can see, a strong, well, there's very much a strong argument, a strong case to say that we're a couple of levels quite comfortably above them in terms of, you know, when it comes to the Championship, for example. We're obviously in the same division, but I think, you know, a lot of the time you can break the Championship down and most leagues down into a couple of different tiers, and they would certainly be in that lower one and we would be in the top one. So I think quite comfortably we're a better side and a better squad. They have obviously picked up since the managerial change in October. So, you know, I would say that's just a case of them being more organised than anything else. You know, I don't necessarily, and you look at the start of the season, it really couldn't have got that much worse. I think they didn't win until the end of October. So the new manager, the manager they brought in the summer, Munoz, didn't win a game, I believe. And so it's not really that shocking to an extent to have done better in the second half of the season, because it couldn't have got much worse, or the second half of obviously the season so far. But I think the new manager's just come in and made things a lot more organised. He's obviously working his first transfer window now and hoping to maybe bring a few players in, I guess. But he started to I guess, right the ship a little bit before that he had the opportunity to do that. So I don't think, he's turned them into wall beaters and this unbelievably attractive team who are playing great football or anything of that nature. I just think he's maybe brought a bit more structure, a little bit more stability, a little bit more organisation, and just made them a bit more difficult to beat. But 11 versus 11, we're comfortably better and they might be a little bit more difficult to beat, but I certainly don't think there's any reason why we shouldn't expect to go there and beat them.
I'm trying to think about Stars. I've not watched much of them this season and watched the whole game, which it's hard to take anything from that when a team goes down to 10 men, of course. They seem to be a team that will try and break a little bit on you, but also do try and sort of throw big balls into the box at times to create danger. I suppose you've got Smith that doesn't always seem to start, but if he's if he's on the pitch, you're always going to see balls flung into him. And it does seem that they have shots quite a lot outside the box from, I think it's, is it Delap, is it? Is that right? No.
Are you thinking Bannon?
Sorry, Bannon maybe, and who am I thinking of as well? Some footballer's son. Ex-footballer.
Oh, Kadamatri.
No.
Windass. You think you're Windass?
Thank you. Windass.
That was a good point, actually. They got a few players who were ex-footballers, and now you think about it, yeah.
Yeah, so, but, so they've got a bit of a mixed sort of style. They don't seem that comfortable, I didn't think, with the ball keeping possession. It's not, you know, they do try and play out from the back, but they don't seem to be a team that are that comfortable at doing that. They do seem like a team that we'd be able to expose. I don't know, what have you made of them sort of so far this season, and who would you keep an eye on, I suppose, and where do you think we can perhaps sort of penetrate them?
Yeah, I think what the new managers come in and tried to do is make them a lot more organised. So I think they generally play with a back four, but they'll have two midfielders who seem to sit. So they're just making themselves that bit more difficult to break down. And from a creative point of view, like I say, I think they're quite happy to let the opposition have the ball more often than not. And they'll just try and nip it away. I think the new manager's come in and he seems to up front, he'll go with Kadamatri, who, you know, I think offers a little bit more in terms of pace than maybe a Smith, who you might target with a bit more of an aerial threat. So that seems to be what they might look to do from an attacking perspective. But I think their main thought is just make themselves organized, you know, obviously have that back line and protect it with two midfielders who can, who obviously are maybe a little bit more defensive in their mindset. And then when it comes to the attacking perspective, just try and nick the ball away and at the minute break more with speed than anything else. I think they're the lowest scorers in the league. So they've got an approach and they're trying to do what plays into their strengths as best as possible. I think this new manager's come in and just tried to, I think, steady the ship and make them more difficult to break down. And for whatever reason, he's obviously decided that when it comes to an attacking perspective, it's try and nip the ball away and break with a bit of speed and obviously play it into a striker who is, yeah, I think his threat is more aligned to pace than, I guess, brute strength and brawn.
What about us? You know, a nice, healthy break now from the Leicester game, which obviously kicked off slightly earlier than usual. You know, obviously on the back of this, we've got a slightly earlier game being a Friday night, but I'm sure we'll see wholesale changes, even though Robins will want, well, will we? I mean, even though Robins will want to win that game, it feels like we will see some changes, yeah. Maybe not as large as Oxford, given the opposition. But, you know, with this one, plenty of rest. Do you see him going unchanged from Leicester, or do you see him wanting to maybe go two up front away from home, or I don't know. I kind of feel like he's going to go unchanged personally.
Yeah, I would be shocked if he changes anything around. I think we're kind of in a situation now where it just feels, you know, it is just so well drilled and well organized, right? So if we play against a team who even allow us to try and have the ball and then, you know, nip it away and break on us, I just think we're so well drilled and organized that we wouldn't get caught out like we might have done earlier in the season.
Yeah.
So I don't think we necessarily need to change what we're doing to suit an opposition or suit being on the road. You know, that it's obviously a formula that's working for us at the minute. And I have felt in the past, you know, whether it be this season or past seasons, I am generally somebody who's a little bit more aligned to say, you know, you might, let's have a look at the opposition and what they might do, particularly when you're playing away from home. But apart from maybe extreme circumstances and extreme situations, I don't think, you know, that benefits us at the minute. We've just got such a well-drilled formula of how we want to play. And even if it's a case of we play a game where we have more of the ball or we might even have less of the ball, we're pretty well set up to account for both of those situations. I would expect us to have more of the ball in this game and you know, Sheffield try and stay well organised and then nick the ball off us and break. But I don't really see them causing us too much trouble if they were to do that, to be honest with you. You know, Leicester didn't in those opportunities where we pressed and they tried to get in behind us and create a bit of space. So I certainly don't see Sheffield Wednesday being any different. So, you know, like the only, I guess, change you would expect to see is if we don't really know what's happening with Wright. I guess it doesn't seem to be a case in my mind that he's going to be available by this weekend. So aside from that, he's the only person I would think, if you obviously could make a change, you would bring in, obviously, if your preferences were available to you. Aside from that, I think everybody else that he wants to start is available and who started against Leicester, basically.
Does it feel like Torp will be on the bench and then maybe get a start against Sheffield Wednesday in the Cup, potentially?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if he will be on the bench in this game, personally. I think I mentioned it in our group chat. I kind of, you know, what Robin said in his introduction interview or whatever you want to call it, his statement when Torp was signed, you know, a lot of those things are very template and 90% of it seems to be the same thing the majority of the time. But it just felt to me as if he really stressed the point of not just saying, you know, it's going to take him a bit of time to get used to Championship football. He was talking about it's going to take him a bit of time to get used to like training as well. And he just felt like he was really stressing. He's not, I think he feels almost a little bit in between. I know we spent, you know, a couple of million pounds on him, and with our Cov brains on, that still feels like a massive amount of money. It's kind of an average amount of money for us now. And it almost feels like he's in between that period of, you know, or that position of, he's obviously not somebody that we've for the future, for 2-3 years down the line, or he's not going to play at all this season, and he's just a development project. But I also don't think he's a straight into the fire, you know, once he's had a bit of time with training and he's going in and starting. I think
don't let Twitter hear you say that, Matt.
Yeah, I think that's our Kov brains, isn't it? You know, again, somebody signed for $2 million. We want to see what he can do, and he should be playing all the time. And you kind of like, you take a step back from that. It's like, well, how much do you really want to change about what's going on at the minute? I'm not saying, you know, he's not going to be involved as a substitute at some stage. It might be this game. It might be involvement in the squad against Wednesday, obviously, in the FA Cup. It feels like that might make sense because it's an FA Cup game. And as much as we're probably taking that a little bit more seriously, maybe, from what you hear at the club this season, than we might have done in past years. I just don't know that necessarily I certainly don't see him starting, but I wouldn't even be shocked if he isn't on the bench, or if he's on the bench but a new substitute. Watch him start now and score two goals, but I don't know. I just, from what he said, I just felt that it might be a little bit of a
slow burner,
like an ongoing thing, a little bit more of a slow burner. I know there's rumours as well around certain players who might be leaving the club in that part of the pitch. So, you know, there might be more of a functional need for him to be involved from a
numbers from
a perspective of numbers. But I don't know what, you know, realistically, we don't want to change too much at the minute, do we?
No, we don't. And, you know, is there any, can you see anything other than a Coventry City win on this game? I mean, we've got a real chance now to solidify ourselves in that playoff spot, and it kind of feels like, actually, you know, over the next couple of games and the fixtures that other teams have got, we could actually, I'm not saying 3 points, but we could potentially put sort of 3 points between us and some of the other teams, and actually start to make that sixth, fifth spot very, very solid, and really kick on. What's your score predictions for this game?
Yeah, I'm going to go for 2-0. I think, you know, can I see anything happening? You always have that risk of a moment and an incident and something happening, and, you know, and that can always turn the game on its head. And, you know, we're certainly not past the point of somebody, you know, making them, it's completely impossible for somebody to make a mistake, or maybe somebody in Sheffield Wednesday's side does something completely out of the expected. But I just think if you look at it from a balanced perspective and look at these two sides and everything on paper, I would suggest realistically you have to look at it as a comfortable win. I think they'll try and make it difficult for us, and I don't necessarily think that's the best approach for them. My prediction's 2-0.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
Now, Matt, before we went live, we obviously asked some polls for our Twitter followers and got, you know, some really good feedback from them. I'm going to ask for your sort of feelings on these as I read them out. So the first one that we wanted to talk about this week was based on sort of our post-Christmas form, where do you see that we'll finish this season? And the options were autos, playoffs, top half, bottom half. 74% of the votes went to playoffs. If you were to be a betting man, where would you put us come the end of the season?
I think I look at it now and I do lean towards playoffs.
Do you think there's any better teams in and around us? Not just now, but just when you watch us play and you look at the teams that we've played, Leeds, Southampton, Leicester, and the performances that we've put in those games. All right, Leeds was a little bit against the wall job, but Southampton, I think, was fairly comfortable. I think there was chances that we had. There was times where their quality unpicked us. And the same with Leicester. I didn't think at times they looked like a team that would be able to break us down.
Yeah, and even using the Leeds example, it's an example of us having to play a different way and play back to the wall and still come out with a result. So actually that, potentially even more than the other games, is an example of, you know, you can really put us up against it and maybe it's not a day where we're going to dominate or maybe even be 50-50 in terms of chances and possession and run of the game, but we still we're still going to be extremely difficult for you to beat us, even if you get ahead, you know, midway through the second half, as we were able to come back in that game. So that's probably an example in itself of how difficult we are. And you're right, obviously leaning on Southampton's and Leicester's. Yeah, I think it's difficult to see another team outside of the top four who are particularly any better than us. I do kind of say I lean towards the playoffs because I think the top four is pretty set. Obviously, you look at the points and the gap we'd have to make up with that. West Brom, though, I know there's a little bit of a gap. I certainly don't think they're out of range for us, but they also do look a pretty good outfit this season they've looked pretty solid, and they, as you say, they get the job done. So, you know, I think they can probably feel quite confident about their chances as well. So then I'm kind of, I guess where I say lean is because I'm kind of going, right, I'm kind of narrowing it down to maybe one or two spots available to us. But the reason I say I lean towards the playoffs is because, as you say, I don't necessarily think there's another team that we should be looking at and saying there's any reason to think that they're any better than us, which is such a nice feeling, because even, you know, last season making the playoffs, you felt like we'd kind of batted above our average for what we'd done when you look at our squad across or against what you might see across squads that we were competing against. And now I don't look at that outside of, let's say, the top four. I agree with, was it 74%?
74%. Next was 66%. And the question was, does Matty Godden fit into Mark Robin's best 11? Now, I don't really like this as a question, even though it was myself that put it out there. But it's a conversation that a lot of people are seeming to have this season. And that's not to want to single anyone out. It's just a conversation that people are having. Yeah. I think to get into the playoffs, a squad that we have arguably is deeper than it's probably ever been in recent seasons, but still means that you need contributions from everyone across that. And, you know, we've had contributions from Liam Kelly this season, for example. So there's always going to be contributions needed. But but just a sort of a simple yes or no and why. Godden, you know, with Hadji Wright and Sims maybe, you know, on the sort of edge of that. Do you see him being a first name on the sort of team sheet up the top?
No. If that's the question, I think I'd have to say no. But I certainly think he's somebody that can be important for us in the squad. And just, I guess, very briefly, yeah, that area of the pitch or that central striker role, because we have such a threat from different areas, I don't necessarily think it needs to be a case of saying there's one person and that person's going to have to score 30 goals a season. You know, it can be somebody who can, yes, you've got the threat of them scoring a goal, or at certain points they might need to be somebody who can hold the ball up a bit better, or there might be somebody who needs to run their socks off and obviously create space for other players. So we're going to probably need to flex that role and have the opportunity to do that with the threat that we have from all areas of the pitch for goals as well. So I'd rather answer it by saying I think he's still in somebody who can be a part of our squad, an influential and important part of our squad.
Yeah, agreed. No, I think that's a really good answer, a really good point. And like you say, we don't have to lean on one person like we did with Gyökeres. The goals are coming from all over the pitch. Sakamoto, O'Hare is chipping in with well more goals than you'd probably expect at this point of his comeback. Yeah. And of course, you know, other people even think there's probably some goals still left in Ben Sheaf, especially once he starts to have less of the sort of shackles that he's kind of got of trying to do all sorts as Victor Torp and that box midfield comes through even more. Lastly then, how many points do you think we'll take from our next three league matches? Just to remind listeners out there, it's Sheffield Wednesday away, Bristol City at home midweek, and then Norwich at Carrow Road on the 3rd of February.
I mean, I'm going to go with 6. I don't see any reason why any of those games are even unwinnable for us. But I I don't know. I guess this is probably just my slightly pessimistic brain going, you look three games into the future, however good it is, I'm still probably not going to be able to pull three wins out of the bag from my prediction. So I kind of, I guess even the, I'm answering that almost from a law of averages perspective. But I think, you know, like my prediction is that we'll beat Sheffield Wednesday. I certainly think we should expect to beat Bristol. So I guess that's my suggesting that I'm thinking we might lose against Norwich. But ask me that before the game happens and I might have a bit of a different answer. But my kind of slightly realistic brain says, yeah, we should at least be expecting, I think, 6 points.
Yeah, well, only 9% of voters went with 9 points. So
shocked, actually. I thought, you know, is this done before or after Leicester?
After Leicester.
Yeah, I thought people would be saying 12, to be honest with you.
But yeah, most people have gone with 7. So, you know, yeah. 2 wins and a draw. Presumably the draw would be away at home to Norwich. But I think 6, like you say, is a decent number, yeah. And that would see us be totally solid in the playoff positions. We're going to touch on it very, very briefly before we end this week's episode. We can't not talk about January transfer windows because it is ongoing. We've already done some business. We've seen Victor Torp obviously come in, and we've talked about him. We know enough about him to know, you know, where he's going to sit this season. But do you see anyone going out? I know there's been some rumours about perhaps Liam Kelly is someone that might move on, and I think he'd do a brilliant job. It does seem that his minutes are going to be far and few between now we've brought a central midfielder in. Eccles has been really, really solid. Sheaf, of course. And even Joel has played in that sort of defensive midfielder role probably as much, I think, as Liam Kelly has or perhaps would this season. So it does seem that he may be surplus requirements, and maybe he, you know, he's asking to remain fit, you know, because at that age you've got to be playing, I guess, to keep that going. That's potentially one. Is there anything else that you see might go out? Not that we've heard any rumours, but just, you know, from the face of it. And then is there any more areas that you'd like to see us improve? And do you think we will?
Yeah, I would still like to see Tavares go out on loan. I know kind of that seemed to be the expectation. I think Robin's pretty strongly hinted at it. But then he kind of, I think, slightly took that back a little bit to suggest he might say, well, he potentially offers something a little bit different. But I wasn't overly confident in his little cameo performance when he came on against Oxford. I thought he looked a little bit like he needed to play football to get him to a level that we're at now, because you've also got to think, you know, as much as we all love what Tavares did in that kind of like exciting short burst of time that he played for us, we've moved on as a club even from that perspective. That's not to say we've moved on necessarily from Tavares as a potential option for us at some point down the line, but I don't think, you know, he is at a level.
Well, he's now sitting next to someone that came in for, you know, 6 odd million, isn't he?
Exactly.
He's come. He's also then sitting next to possibly Godden if it's right, leading the line on his own. So he's sitting next to someone like Godden as an established Championship scorer. Then you mix that with Torp and you know, Palmer. It's a very deep bench, isn't it, for someone like Tavares to get on the pitch.
Yeah. So I just think he would definitely benefit from going out on loan, and I wouldn't be shocked to see that. I would be relatively surprised, other than Liam Kelly, which obviously you've touched on, so I won't dwell on that too much, but I'd be relatively surprised if it was anybody else from kind of the senior squad to go out now. I think in terms of incomings, I guess I would say if we were to sign anybody else now, which I wouldn't be shocked to see happen, I would also consider it almost a little bit of a luxury, right? You know, there doesn't feel like there's too many occasions where we'd still be the best part of 2 weeks out of the end of the transfer window, where I think most probably realistic Coventry fans would be saying, it'd be nice to bring somebody else in, but do we actually massively really need it? I try and think about the areas where if one was to go out injured, where would we be struggling? And maybe you could kind of really delve into it and look at those, but I don't know. I think the rumours maybe have centred around a striker. I don't know what you'd, if that's something you would suggest, but obviously that probably ties in with the Godin conversation, right? I think the people who maybe think Godin needs to be moved on are the ones who would then say we probably need to bring a striker in, but I don't necessarily think it's an urgent need for us.
No, I think you made a really good point earlier on, in that it, not that it doesn't matter who is in that middle position, but the attacking build up is coming from much more than that. That it doesn't seem to be central to how we're going to perform and how we're going to take points away from other teams. I touched on it, sort of. I don't know. Not that I dislike just De Silva. I think he's a very good player. I think the left could be potentially an issue if we were to get an injury down that side. You could argue the same with the right. But maybe, you know, it'd put, you know, Latabotier there and maybe switch things around. I think you're right. I don't think there's that many gaps that need filling.
Mm. It's difficult, isn't it? Because you're probably thinking, you know, if there were to be an injury, then you might say, whilst at the minute we might have one person to go in and it not be too bad, then you kind of think, okay, right, who's the cover behind that? So it would be a case of an injury.
But that would be across the pitch, wouldn't it? You know, you can't then go and have three.
Yeah, what can you do?
Options. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, no, yeah. I think you're right, and you know, never say never. Mark Robbins and the recruitment team are always trying to do something. I think, like you said, there are some players that would benefit from some match time now by going out on loan. And I think Tavares would be someone that would fit that mould. That brings us to the end of this week's episode. It's been great fun talking everything Sky Blues again, Matt, and obviously we hope all of our listeners at home have enjoyed that. If they do want to get in touch with us, they can, of course, using the hashtag SBE podcast. And obviously, always remind us that we're very lucky to be sponsored by the Sky Blue Tavern and Dibbins Brewery, and we do sort of make sure that fans get up to the tavern before or Dylan's before a game and enjoy the post or pre-match atmosphere, because it is really, really good. And I think we're very, very lucky to have such venues now, you know, in and around the sort of CBS, because we didn't always have those options, and we hope that fans will go and enjoy them.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra Podcast.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.